This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right. The Rob Brown Show back on your radio. It's the Fan Upstate. Rob Brown, the Grape and Lonzo, and you. The Hub City Spartanburger text line is open for you right now. 844-326-3663. You can text that number. We'll read them on the air. We've got a few texts so far that I've read, and I'm going to be better about reading all your texts, okay? All of them. All of them. You can also call that number, 844-326-3663, and you can jump on the air with us if you've got a take. If you don't want to do that, you can shoot us a tweet at The Rob Brown Show, at Lonzo on Word, or get up at everybody in here by tweeting at The Fan Upstate if you'd like to get at us in that direction. If you got something long format, but you don't want to come on the air with it, rob.brown at thefanupstate.com. rob.brown at thefanupstate.com. All of those are ways for you to get in contact with and be a part of the radio program. We've got a lot coming up in this hour of the show. Next segment, Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, said that there was a big old round table discussion between he and the 16 head football coaches of the Southeastern Conference down at the SEC spring meetings in lovely Destin, Florida yesterday. And the playoff proposal that the 16 head coaches are largely in favor of is not at all the one that I expected that they would have largely been in favor of. Now, whether or not we believe Greg is a different story, and we will address that coming up in the next segment. Also, our stupid, dumb off-season question of the day. We won't always have stupid, dumb off-season questions of the day, but sometimes they come up because this is radio and we're dorks. Shut up.
I am interested to see what makes it not just stupid, but stupid dumb, because that adds a whole level to it.
Yeah, there's stupid questions. There's dumb questions. There are no dumb questions. There are only dumb people, except there are dumb questions. Yesterday, and
are dumb questions and dumb people. And sometimes smart people ask dumb questions.
And sometimes dumb people ask smart questions.
Yes.
This is all very true. So here is the question. I got into this with Denton Day last night. We're not going to talk about this now. I want you to stew on it. I want you to think on it. I want you to really come up with an answer, because Denton Day and I are often accused of being the same person. Of course, Denton Day is the host of College Football Overtime on Sirius XM. Buddy of the show College Football Overtime on Sirius XM. He also hosts his own show in Baltimore, Maryland. He is also a host on the BetMGM network. We are regularly accused of being the same person. We have the same haircut. We have the same beard. We dress the same way. We have a lot of the same takes. He's a very smart guy, and dare I say, sexy as hell.
Also, he's also a wrestling fan.
And so he is also a wrestling guy.
That.
He and I are very...
And an anime fan.
Yes, so he is. Very, very often accused of being...
Which makes him a step above you. I just want you to know
that. I mean, fair enough for you nerds. Very often accused of being the same guy. But we got into it last night because he asked a question on Instagram that I responded to with great violence. He asked the question. It is one we are going to discuss and debate later, because somebody also dropped a banger on the "is a hot dog a sandwich" discussion that we are going to have during the audio blitz coming up in 1 hour from right now. Denton Day asked the question, is lemonade a juice. And my gut reaction was, yeah, it's lemon juice. Even if you put water in it, it's still lemon juice. No. I would say up until the point that it is 51% water, in which case, then I would say you've got a mix. But if it's 51% lemon juice, lemonade is juice. Just we're not going to debate it now.
No, just a quick question. How did you think I was going to respond?
Honestly, in agreement with me. I really did. Wow. I really thought you were going to say lemonade's a juice.
I hate that I disappointed you.
It's okay.
But, you know.
I'm used to being disappointed.
Yeah,
Look at my entire career.
I'm not a science guy. I'm sure you're going to base everything that you're going to say later on science to prove why it's a juice.
No, I mean, I don't know that you can always utilize science to define things, and I don't know that there is a hard definition. So we're going to come back and discuss and debate that later on in the show, as well as get into, because it is peak off season time, ladies and gentlemen. Somebody dropped a banger on, is a hot dog a sandwich? Had a take that I was like, oh, I never thought about it that way. And it's very interesting. So we'll come up with that later on in the show. However, it is 7:06 in the morning. You have exactly 54 minutes until you have got to get your patootie into the office, sat down in that chair, respond to those passive aggressive emails, and get ready to handle your business. Or perhaps somebody else's business. But we all know what you're going to work for. You're going to work for those 3 or 4 15-minute breathers that you get. We know it keeps you alive. It's those handful of times that you walk down the hallway, you go to the water cooler, you set up shop, and you talk sports with your coworkers that love sports. That's what keeps you coming back for more. And if you're going to talk sports in the office, well, you have to know what's going on in the world of sports. And if you have to know what's going on in the world of sports, ladies and gentlemen, you need this. It is the Water Cooler Cheat Sheet, the top 3 sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office and start talking sports with your coworkers this morning. When you do, this is what you're going to be talking about. Allow us, if you will, to dive right in with item numero uno. As it has been for the past few weeks, and as it will be for the next few weeks, your NBA and NHL playoff check-in is item number one. We start over in the Association, where the Indiana Pacers have now pushed the New York Knickerbockers to the brink of elimination. Indy now leads that series 3-1 after a 130-121 night last night. Tyrese Halliburton, a genius. 32 points, a dozen boards, 15 assists in a triple-double. They also got 30 from Pascal Siakam on 11 of 21 shooting and 3 of 4 from behind the arc. He had 5 boards and a couple of assists. 16 from Aaron Nesmith. They also got 20 off the bench from Benedict Mathurin, who had 5 of 8 from the floor, 20 points, added a couple of boards and a couple of assists into that tally as well. Over for the Knicks, 31 out of Jalen Brunson on 9 of 19 from the floor, 2 of 6 from deep. He did go to the stripe a dozen times, knocked down 11 of them, 24 from Karl Anthony Towns. And this might end up being the most interesting part of the game. It is not the win. It is not the fact that the Knicks are now on the brink of being eliminated from championship contention. What is the most interesting here is the fact that Big Cat was clearly not well. Around halftime, he was seen hanging on to his right knee, trying to rub out some pain from something. Then, down the stretch, late in the game, Pacers have the ball, dribble drive, penetrate. Big Cat goes up for the stuff and knee-to-knee contact on that same knee. Karl Anthony Towns was not the same guy at the end of that game, clearly in discomfort with a flat tire under his right thigh. Do not know what impact that's going to have, because let's keep it a buck. Jalen Brunson has been very good in this postseason. OG Anunoby has been very good in this postseason. 22 for him on 7 of 16 from the floor last night. Mikal Bridges has been a phenomenal defensive player for the Knicks in this postseason run. But it is the Big Cat, Karl Anthony Towns, that has been the heart and soul of this Knicks team in this postseason run. If this is going to be a lingering issue for a cat, if that discomfort is something that is going to be hampering him in game number 5 when this team gets together with with the Pacers back in New York City, if Cat can't be that guy, you end up with a problem because Miles Turner is that guy. 13 points last night in the middle, but 8 or so of those points came in big moments of the game, big moments in the game specifically where Cat did not look like himself under the basket. If this is a lingering injury, it could spell disaster for the New York Knickerbockers. We'll talk more about that later on in the show. To the NHL we go, where the Dallas Stars are now facing elimination. A team that many of y'all picked to ultimately win the Stanley Cup now finds themselves in a 3-1 hole to the Edmonton Oilers after a 4-1 victory for the Canadiens last night. Leon Draisaitl knocked through a power play goal about halfway through the first period. Jason Robertson on a power play goal for Dallas would draw them level 7 minutes into the second. Corey Perry, less than 3 minutes later, would find the back of the net. 3 goals, 3 power play goals between these two teams. Edmonton would take a 2-1 lead into the locker room for intermission number 2. In the third period, we played level hockey for 17 minutes and 33 seconds until Kasperi Kapanen found the back of the net on an empty netter with Kulak and Draisaitl assisting. Adam Henrique found an empty netter with less than a minute to play. That would ultimately put this thing out of reach for Dallas. So Edmonton now, with a 4-1 win last night, leads that series 3-1. Let's go to item number 2. I've said a few times that I promise you Atlanta Braves scores are not going to be a consistent water cooler cheat sheet item throughout the season. Because I know that there are many of you that are fans of the Bravos, but I also know that most of you probably are not. However, I also said yesterday, if the Braves drop 2 or 3 out of this 3-game series on the road at Philadelphia, I believe that I can go ahead and say on May 29th, when Game 3 concludes, if they drop 2 or 3, I personally will consider the Atlanta Braves out of the race for the National League's Eastern Division crown. I am so convicted of that that I said it last night on BetMGM Tonight to a national audience as well. PJ Glasser said, how are you betting the Braves? Do you take a divisional championship bet now, or do you wait to the end of the season, see if they get hot, and maybe see if you can get some long wild card World Series action in? And my answer to PJ was the exact same take I had on the show yesterday. I am not betting on the Braves at all if they drop 2 out of 3 to Philly. They dropped Game 1 last night 2-0. Spencer Strider took the loss. He is 0-3 on the season. Went 4.2 innings. Gave up just 1 hit, 1 run. It was earned. Walked 4. K'd 7 on 90 pitches before he got yanked last night. They went to De Los Santos, who gave up 1 hit. Dylan Lee, Montero, and Hernandez all came in. Hernandez probably coulda, shoulda, woulda been tagged with the loss. 1 inning, 2 hits, 1 run earned. K'd 2, walked 2. Ranger Suarez, 4 hits given up in 6 innings for Philly. Did strike out 8 Atlanta Braves. The Braves mustered just 5 hits. They left 10 runners on bases. They only had 2 at-bats with runners in scoring position last night. They did, because they're the Braves, go 0-for-2 in those 2 at-bats. Matt Olson and Austin Riley both had an opportunity. Neither one of them able to come through. The Braves drop Game 1 of a 3-game set on the road at Philly by a scoreline of 2-0. That drops them to 25-28 on the season, 9-19 on the road, and they are now 9.5 games back of the Phillies. Even if the Phillies later on in the year, the reality of the situation is that there is a number that is not overcomable, even if you go on a run and the Phillies down the stretch. And I think if they are at 11.5 at the end of the month of May, that's a lot of comebacking to do. Let's jump to item number three. Only going to give you the headline here because this is the conversation that we have been teasing to come up in the next segment of the radio broadcast. The SEC's spring meetings are taking place as we speak down in sunny Destin, Florida. And there's been a few things that have come out of this. Yesterday, I may end up apologizing, find out in the next segment, said that I thought Greg Sankey was full of crap. Because Greg Sankey said over the weekend, and by the way, I say respectfully full of crap, because his job is the betterment of the Southeastern Conference. His job is to say and do the things that are in the best interest of the conference, not college football at large. And I thought Greg Sankey did that over the weekend when he said that the SEC is not currently committed to any one particular format for the college football playoffs. The SEC as a conference is not locked into the 4-4-2-2-1-3 model, nor any other model of determining who gets in, what the seeding is, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, and Greg is full of crap. And again, respectfully, I would be too. I would do the same thing. Because rule number one of negotiating is never show a card until you are in the 11th hour. Never say what you are happy with because your starting point should be nowhere near your ending point. So I said Greg Sankey's full of crap because I think when it comes down to it, the SEC is going to ask for more. They're going to say four automatic qualifiers, only four for us, the SEC. Why get four when it just means more? You should give us five. You should give us in the Big Ten five, take two at-larges away. I thought that this was how it's going to play out. Well, yesterday, Greg said that the 16 teams of the SEC had their coaches sit down together with the commish and discuss what format they might be the most interested in advocating for. And it was absolutely.
Tell me. I want to know.
I am going to tell you, Lonzo, right after this break.
No.
Because here's the thing. If you'll allow me to go clickbaity for just a minute. The format they chose may shock you. Find out what Sankey said next on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The Rob Brown Show is on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate. Greg Sankey is the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference. And I owe Greg an apology, I think. I owe Greg an apology because yesterday I said Greg Sankey was full of crap. Over the weekend at the spring meetings of the Southeastern Conference down in sunny Destin, Florida, Greg Sankey said that the Southeastern Conference has not yet committed to any particular or specific format for the college football playoff. And I accused Greg, respectfully, of being full of crap.
Yes, respectfully.
Respectfully. And I accused him of, respectfully, being full of crap because my thought was, as we have not arrived at a specific format for the 16-team playoff, which at this point is going to happen, not this season, but next, that Greg Sankey was going to keep all the cards close to the vest so that the SEC could ask for more because it just means more. And so my thought, my belief was Greg Sankey and the Southeastern Conference, as they should. I'm not faulting Greg for this. His one job is not to make college football better. It is to improve the betterment. It is for the betterment of the Southeastern Conference. that Greg would not give anything away, so that when Greg and the Southeastern Conference sat down at the next meeting of the College Football Playoff Committee to determine what next year's 16-team playoff format was going to be, Greg could again ask for more. My floated hypothesis with absolutely nothing behind it other than my own gut feeling and intuition, which is occasionally incorrect, was that Greg would go call up his boy Tony Petitti, the commissioner of the Big Ten, and they would say, hey, we get four automatic qualifiers under the plan that seems to have the most traction. What if we ask for five? What if we say instead of a 4-4-2-2-1-3 model, where there are three at-large bids after all the conference champions have been determined, what if we say five automatic qualifiers for the two big conferences, two for the ACC and the Big 12, the mid-tier conferences, one for the best group of five champ, and then one at-large bid for the rest of the field? And again, is that good for college football? In my subjective and personal opinion, no. But Greg Sankey's job is not to do what's best for college football. It's to do what's best for the SEC. And considering there is a payout in the millions of dollars for a team just to get into the playoff, and then obviously tens of millions of dollars as you play deeper into the playoff, it would make sense that Greg Sankey would do everything in his power to get another team in as a freebie. Yesterday, Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, said that he and the 16 head football coaches of the SEC had a sit-down roundtable meeting. And Sankey said that in that meeting, the coaches largely talked about what he called a, quote, 5+11 model. Sankey said, quote, they talked about, I'll call it a 5+11 model, and our own ability to earn those earn those berths. At the coaching level, the question is, why wouldn't that be fine? Why wouldn't we do that? We talked about 16.
And a boat are the same thing. So way to go.
A boat has a berth.
Okay. Well, still, it's nautically related.
Fair enough. At the coaching level, the question is, why wouldn't that be fine? Why wouldn't we do that? We talked about 16 with them, so good conversation. Not a destination, but the first time I've had the ability to go really in-depth with ideas with them. Now, obviously, Sankey, along with Pete Bavakwa of Notre Dame and the rest of the other FBS commissioners, still will all have to have their sit-down together meeting, and Sankey did say that that meeting, which is right now scheduled for December 1st, he said it's probably too early to say this is where we are, this is what we want, this is what we will push for. But I am going to say this. A big, hearty pat on the back to the coaches of the Southeastern Conference for showing some stones here. A big pat on the back for the coaches in the SEC for having some guts with an N. Good for you guys, because that is what it should be. Look, I am fine with having some spots for conference champions. And on top of that, it does one other thing that still matters a lot, which is it makes the conference championship games still matter a lot. Which under, I think, the proposed format, which is the 4-4-2-2-1-3 or whatever the hell it is, those conference championship games for the big conferences largely become irrelevant. With a straight seeding model, which we are going to this year, where it is just the top-ranked teams in the order that they are ranked, those conference championship games lose a lot of weight. But if the only guaranteed way in is to win the conference, now all of a sudden, the ACC tournament in Charlotte, The SEC tournament in Atlanta, the Big Ten, as I say tournament, the ACC championship game in Charlotte, the SEC championship game in Atlanta, the Big Ten championship game in Indianapolis. All of a sudden, these games are arguably as important as they have ever been. And that is good for college football, A, and B, the other thing it does, and I think this to me is why the 16 coaches of the SEC should get a pat on the back of respect and congratulations for having stones, is that this creates a world that we are looking for, that ideal sports world where it is even playing field for everybody. You already have the advantage of being in a conference where by default your strength of schedule is going to be better than anybody else can even possibly put together if they wanted to. And with the SEC and the Big Ten, who will be going to a nine-team scheduled conference, or excuse me, a nine-conference game, a nine-conference game schedule at some point, it is going to be even more difficult because, as we talked about with that USC-Notre Dame rivalry last week, if you are a team that has to play nine conference games in the SEC, in the Big Ten, hell, in the ACC and the Big 12, in what world are you going out and scheduling with your three remaining, and for many schools, Clemson and South Carolina, your two remaining games? Oh, and by the way, Clemson, in years where Notre Dame isn't naturally on your schedule, they are now with that 12-year partnership. That means there are going to be years where Clemson has one game available to schedule. In what world would you schedule an out-of-conference world beater to fill that slot? Your schedule's already tough enough as it is, especially if we go to nine.
By the way, really quick, you would do that if you're in a weaker conference and you want to make yourself prove that your team is good enough to be in the playoff. The other thing is, so I didn't really understand this till now. I want to make sure I understand it correctly. So the seeding happens after the championship games.
Yes.
So why would, is there anyone out there opposed to this?
I don't know yet. I mean, this literally dropped yesterday afternoon.
Okay, because I didn't know if you've heard of anyone. I haven't seen any.
I haven't seen anybody opposed to it.
Because it's, I'm not going to say it's perfect, but it's really good.
Well, let's start with this. I do know who would be opposed to it, and that's the athletic directors and the presidents. Because if I'm in the SEC, and I know that at the least four teams could go in, and those teams make that. And again, right now, it's what? It's $14 million just for getting in, and then an X bonus of $10 million every level that you advance in the playoffs. If I get my team in, and that's a big windfall profit day, yeah, I would love an automatic berth. I'll tell you who this could impact. South Carolina. Yesterday, I was on the BetMGM Tonight Show with Ryan Horvath. We were talking. PJ said, if I gave you $100 to bet an over win total for South Carolina and Clemson, South Carolina's at 7.5, Clemson's at 9.5, who would you feel more comfortable putting that $100 on? And my answer was, I'd put 50 on both. Let's put them right down the middle. I think both of these teams could send a quarterback to the Heisman Trophy celebration in New York City at the end of the year. And if both of them do that, it's largely probably because they both hit the over total. Well, in the format with 12 teams and four AQ berths, which, again, is not the case this year, but if it was, tell me that doesn't automatically make South Carolina a threat to grab that fourth SEC spot. Of course it does. So a year like this year, that could be a big problem.
Would it have happened last year? I think it would have, right?
Yes, I believe it would have. So this will have an impact for a lot of schools, but it is also a matter, and I'll keep it a buck. I've gone back and forth about why it is that these coaches would want this. And the first thing I came up with is this. More than I think any other group of people, and I got to give them credit for this, more than I think any other group of people, it seems to me that the loudest group of people in the just give us the 16 best teams discussion are coaches. Like I've heard Dabo Swinney say it. Lane Kiffin said it yesterday at the meetings. Steve Sarkisian said it yesterday at the meetings. Give us the 16 best teams. And this, arguably, is the best way to do that. Let's go five conference champs. the four plus the one non-power conference champion, and then the other 11 spots just filled with the next best 11 teams. Just fill them up and let's see who is the best. So I got a lot of respect for the coaches of the SEC. Now, will it matter? I don't know. Because again, Greg Sankey's job is to make the most money he can for the conference and put it in the best position it can to keep being the powerhouse conference that it is. The athletic directors and school presidents are going to look at it. I mean, think about it if you're South Carolina. You're going to look and go, hey, if the SEC gets four in, all we got to do is be top four in the SEC and we bank a couple of $10 million. Yeah, I want that plan. But the coaches looked at this and they're talking about it like football guys. I want to see the best teams go play for a natty. I want to see the best teams in the field of 16. I want to see the best teams up against each other on the gridiron to determine who is the best team. And that's what this is. A 5 plus 11 model is not at all what I would have thought. Even if it happened, I would have assumed Greg would have had that conversation and walked out of that room and said, yeah, I'm never telling anybody our coaches said that. I'm never telling a soul that that's what they want because it's not best for the conference. But I got a hell of a lot of respect for the coaches for saying that. And I got a hell of a lot of respect for Greg Sankey for grabbing a mic and being willing to say, that's what the coaches want. And they think it's best for football because, hey, so do I. Back after this on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
So a 5 plus 11 format. That would see the top 5 college football conference champions plus 11 at-large bids. According to Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, is the preference of the head coaches within that conference. And as I said in the last segment, I got a lot of respect for the coaches because let's keep it a buck here. The best chance to get your team into the playoffs would be if your conference has as many automatic qualifiers as possible. And let's be very clear. This does not mean that when December 1st rolls around and when the College Football Playoff Selection Committee gets together to determine what the format will be for the first year of the 2026 college season, the first year of the 16-team playoff field, does not mean that the SEC will ask for this. I think they will take it into consideration, take it under advisement. But I do think it is very likely, I will not say probable, but I think it is very likely that Greg Sankey will, on behalf of the Southeastern Conference, still be in favor of the 4-4-2-2-1-1-3 model, where the SEC would get 4 automatic qualifiers. Why? Because it is unlikely, not impossible, but unlikely that the 4th best team in the SEC is going to be one of those best 11. Remember, only 11 at-large spots. Unlikely that the 4th best team in the SEC is going to, at least consistently, be in that next 11 group. And I think because of that, it would make sense for the SEC to say, we want as many teams as we can get in. And while we might occasionally get 3 more teams in that 11 at-large field, realistically, more often than not, and certainly the only way to guarantee we are getting 3 teams in plus our conference champion, is to go to a format where we have 4 automatic qualifiers. My objection to that system is solely from a sports mentality. It is solely from a sports mentality of, I think that even though it will be a small miracle if a non-Big Ten, SEC, ACC, or Big 12 team ever wins a national championship again. If one does, if a G5 team, if a non-Power 4 team ever wins a natty, the documentaries about that program are going to be great. But it's unlikely to happen, and if it ever does, it will be absolutely uncommon. So for me, I think the college football field should be set in a way that all of the teams in those conferences genuinely feel like they have the best chance to get in and earn a spot. Even if there is a year where a Boise State stumbles upon an Ashton Janti, a historic caliber player that carries them to a 12-0, 13-0, 12-1 smaller conference championship, and therefore by default gets the one group of five at large, there would still be 11 more spots. So if another team from another conference also goes 12-1, or maybe a school from a smaller conference. And again, I think this is going to be far less likely in the future, because why would I if I play for a big conference that has a 9 conference game schedule? Why in the world would I book a championship caliber second tier conference team on my schedule? But if a team comes out of the Mountain West and they go 10-2 in the regular season, and let's say their losses are to two, you know, Big Ten and SEC teams, or an SEC and an ACC team, or whatever, they would still be considered a very good team, and a team that maybe has an outside underdog puncher's chance of a shot. But if we go with the 4-4-2-2-1-3-1-1-3-3-19-42-8-6-7-5-3-0-9 format, they probably just get locked out by numbers.
Did you say 8-6-7-5-3-0-9?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, I was just making sure I heard that.
If I got to go random string of numbers, Jesse is the easiest one to go with.
Jenny
is... Okay, I'm locked in football mode right now, okay? Sports guy over here. So, I think 5 plus 11 is the best way to do it. It genuinely makes it feel like everybody who's not in the Power 4 has a chance. And oh, by the way, those 11 spots can still be earned by SEC, Big Ten, ACC, and Big 12 schools. Those, in fact, I would argue that those 11 spots will still likely most often be filled up by Power 4 conference schools, probably with a tilt towards the SEC and the Big Ten. So they still have the advantage. They've got the advantage of, by default, having a strength of schedule advantage that smaller conferences just cannot match. By default, they have the advantage of the financial backing for having more teams more routinely go to the playoffs. This just levels the field on the field. Without dramatic reform that many of you would grab pitchforks and torches over, without dramatic revolutionary change to the game, there is no way to level the playing field in terms of resources. There's just not. There's no way to say that UNLV and Alabama start the year not just with the same opportunity to earn a playoff spot, but start the year with the same financial resources to grow their program with. So if we can't make that level across the playing field, we at least can make the on-the-field competition level, where the opportunity to earn an at-large bid is identical for UNLV and Alabama. Alabama's got the advantage of playing in the SEC. The strength of schedule by default is going to be better. Alabama has the advantage of playing in the SEC, meaning the financial payouts are going to just be exponentially better. But UNLV has the opportunity, I don't know why I picked UNLV, but UNLV has the opportunity to be the plucky little underdogs to go find that Travis Hunter or that Ashton Janty who, for whatever reason, just wants to be a Wolfpack guy. They go on a 12-0 regular season. Maybe they don't have the toughest strength of schedule, but they are 12-0. And the committee or the computers or whatever say, yeah, they earned a shot. They earned an opportunity to go compete. And now they have it, where they might not under the 4-4-2-2-1-1-3 model. They may not have that opportunity just because of numbers. So I will say that I am at the point now where I think whatever format we arrive at, the coaches in college football should have an opportunity to have a say. As I've said a gazillion times and will a gazillion more, Greg Sankey's job is to look out solely and only for the financial interest of the SEC. Tony Petitti's job is to look out solely and only for the interest of the Big Ten. That's it. So it would not shock me if December 1st, when this committee gets together to discuss, debate, and probably vote on a playoff format for the expanded 16-team playoff of 2026, it would not shock me if they said, yeah, we don't really give a damn what Shane Beamer thinks. We don't really give a damn what Dabo Swinney thinks. We don't really care. Because our job is to make sure we are getting as much in the coffers as we can, and guaranteeing ourselves the payout of a minimum of four teams in the playoffs is the best way to do that. So they may vote against the college football coaches. But at least the coaches in this spot feel like we should make it level, at least on the field. There is only one place the playing field is level, and that is from the opening kickoff to the closing whistle. For those 3 hours of football, those two teams have the exact same opportunity to win. Those two teams have the exact same playing field, same dimensions, same surface, same ball, same music, same crowd, same everything. They have the exact same opportunity to win. Off the field, that's not true at all. But if we're going to make the game have some level of honor and dignity, making it as equal on the field as possible is the right way to go. And that's what these coaches have just agreed to, and I have an immense level of respect to them for doing that. That's fantastic. Scott Strickland, athletic director at Florida, said that he is actually, as of this announcement, not in favor of the Southeastern Conference moving to a 9-conference game schedule, not without guaranteed playoff access for the SEC. He said, quote, "That's hard for me. There's not a sport that our league competes in where less than half our members are not in the postseason except for one, and it happens to be the one we all pay the most attention to. Last year, 3 of our 16 teams were in the playoff. I think that's a problem systemically with the structure of what we're trying to do." So Lonzo asked me in the last segment, who's against this? Who's against this? Who would speak out and say a 5+11 model ain't it? And my gut answer, without having seen that quote that I just stumbled across from athletic director of the Florida Gators, Scott Strickland, was athletic directors and school presidents, boards of governors and commissioners and regents and whatever their names they take, governing bodies in the college football landscape will be against it. Why? Well, at least in the SEC and Big Ten. Why? Because it unguarantees guarantees. And I'm not going to say takes money off the table, because you still do have to be one of the best four teams and get in to put that money on the table. But it does guarantee it's now going to be harder to get to the table. It does guarantee it's going to be harder to sit where all the big stack of dollar bills y'all are and reach out your hand and grab your fair share of them. It doesn't necessarily guarantee that fewer teams will go to the playoffs in a given year. It does guarantee that there is no guarantee that four teams will go every single year. And that means less money, not just for the schools themselves, but for everybody in the conference at large. So ADs and presidents and, frankly, conference commissioners are largely going to be against this. But y'all, I don't think there's going to be a football fan in America who's going to say this is a bad idea, unless you are the Rob Lowe of the SEC. You don't wear a team hat. You just wear an SEC logo on the hat. You don't wear a team jersey. You just wear a generic SEC jersey. If you are a SEC fan but not a fan of a team within it, then I could see you being against this plan from the college football coaches in the conference. But I doubt there's very many of that guy. I doubt there's very many guys that go, yeah, I don't really have a team. I'm just a big SEC guy. I don't have a team in the conference. I'm just a fan of the conference. That's not a thing. So the answer is, I think fans are going to be largely in favor of this because now everybody's got a shot, but the SEC and the Big Ten still have the best opportunity because they have the resources to get themselves in. ADs and presidents, authority figures will be against it. Those that are football guys first, not business guys first. All those dudes we mentioned, ADs, presidents, conference commissioners, they're all business guys first. They don't care about the numbers on the box score. They care about the numbers on the financial report. We care about the numbers on the box score first. Never once have we come in here on a Monday morning during football season and said, water cooler cheat sheet item number one, the University of Florida earned $17 million this weekend. No, no, no. We come in here and we go, Florida won 17-14. Their quarterback threw for this and their running back ran for that and their receiver received for this. This is a football first format that has been proposed. And again, pat on the butt and a good game to every one of the coaches who had the rocks to say this is the way to do it. And pat on the butt and a good game to Greg Sankey for grabbing the mic and expressing that instead of locking it up out of fear that it would hurt his negotiation stance when we get to December 1st. And it is time to vote on what that format should look like. I'm really happy to see this. All right, let's take a break. When we come back next hour, we will bat lead off with the audio blitz, the best audio we've picked up in the past 24 hours of the show. Before we get there, here's the best audio you're going to hear this morning. It's Lonzo's Sports Flash.
Yeah, we'll see if I can get through this. The Atlanta Braves dropped game one of a three-game road set against Philadelphia 2-0. Spencer Strider went 4.2 innings, giving up one hit and one run. While striking out seven, the Braves had just five hits and left 10 runners on base. The New York Knicks are one game from elimination after a 130-121 Pacers win in game four. Tyrese Halliburton had a triple-double with 32 on 11 of 23 shooting with 15 assists and a dozen boards, and Pascal Siakam added 30 on 11 of 21. Game 5 is tomorrow night. The Edmonton Oilers have the Dallas Stars on the brink of elimination after a 4-1 win last night. The Oilers took a 2-1 lead after goals from Leon Draisaitl and Corey Perry and scored two empty netters in the final 2.5 minutes to seal the win. Hour number 3 of the Rob Brown Show is next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.